It's a privilege to introduce our next speaker. I've known Howard Waiskin for many, many years, since he graduated from Harvard Medical School and the Harvard University with an MD and a PhD. And he has continued his illustrious career as a conscientious objector, as a distinguished professor, emeritus now, of doesn't tell me what's your distinguished university professor of, but I'm going to say social medicine because it's close. And I'm going to say that Howard is also author of many books. One of the most recent is Medicine and Public Health at the End of Empire. His paper, which is an example of the kind of work he's done with other people in his universities, is entitled Working Toward Peace by Providing Civilian Health and Mental Health Services for Active Duty Military Personnel, and with two co-authors whom he has nurtured. And it's a privilege to introduce him to you as a stalwart in the work of peace and the work of justice. Howard Waiskin.
Thank you very much for that touching introduction. I'm very honored to be here with you guys as well. I wanted to acknowledge my co-workers, Rizal Remen, who is a graduate of the Latin American Medical School in Cuba, currently a resident in family medicine at the University of Alabama, and Mario Cruz, who's in psychiatry on the faculty of the University of New Mexico. As objectives, I'd like to describe the conditions that lead active duty GIs to seek civilian health and mental health services, to discuss the characteristics of those GIs who use such civilian services, to analyze the rationale for civilian services as an alternative to the contradictions inherent in military services for active duty GIs, and to analyze how such services may contribute to peace. I'd like to acknowledge also the Center for Health Policy at the University of New Mexico, which amazingly enough has provided support and a lot of encouragement for this work. I won't go through the list of people who have contributed, but you can see them there: project coordinators who are veterans, intake specialists, therapists, advisors in psychiatry, advisors in law, the GI Rights Hotline, which is an organization of 25 peace and faith-based organizations, and then a little bit of financial support, but most of this is actually supported to the extent it needs money by clinical earnings, and the vast majority of the work is by volunteers. I also wanted to mention that Hans Buwalde is actually in the room, one of our most highly esteemed and wonderful therapist, has done an enormous amount of work in this area, based out of Chicago, but really working all over the country. These are some of the websites that are pertinent. This describes the project. This is an article about it. This is the RESIST site that has provided a small amount of funding, and this is actually my recent book. And this information is about it. I'm mentioning this for two reasons. It describes the project in more detail, and also the proceeds of it are largely going for this project. So methods. The sample is actually drawn from the clients of our network of civilian physicians and mental health service providers, Civilian Medical Resources Network, who offer their services to active duty military personnel. It's actually, this research aspect of it is a multi-method approach using both quantitative and qualitative analysis of data collected during intake and follow-up interviews. Now, the objectives of the network are to provide independent medical or mental health evaluations and treatment in the civilian sector for people serving on active duty with the military. The work addresses both physical and psychological problems, At the GI's request, the evaluation may include letters to military officers or other authorities regarding the relevance of physical or psychological problems to the need for discharge or reassignment. These activities may include counseling by phone and referrals to professionals who work in the GI's geographical area. The professionals who conduct the evaluations do so at no or reduced charge, if usually voluntarily, if the GI does not have usable insurance coverage and cannot afford to pay customary fees. And because about half the clients are absent without leave, AWOL, they actually aren't subject to any, they actually don't have access to any insurance coverage whatsoever. And then to collaborate with the GI Rights Hotline, the Military Law Task Force, and other organizations for outreach to improve medical and psychological services in the civilian sector for active duty GIs. We began this in 2005. Actually, it was begun during Iraq I, actually, and then there was a break, and then we began again in 2005. Recently, we've been taking in about 3 new clients weekly and about 120 clients yearly. Obviously, we're just dealing with the tip of the iceberg here with a small network of volunteers, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to present this here to encourage any of you who's interested in participating. Now, so what happens is the GI calls the GI Rights Hotline, which is an 800 number. It's staffed by the 25 organizations that I mentioned. There are geographical nodes around the country, and the call goes to the node that contains the zip code of the GI's, area code of the GI that's calling. The instructions on how to make these referrals are at this website, and then this is a website that accesses our secure, encrypted website. As you can imagine, keeping confidential about this group of people who have tremendous needs and are under great jeopardy is very challenging. And actually, one of our veterans designed this website that's extremely helpful. And this is what it looks like. The counselor from the GI Rights Hotline enters this information on this part of the website request for service page. The client information is indicated here. The intake interview, which is again done mostly by veterans, either volunteering or part-time paid veterans, explain the procedures and obtain informed consent for the evaluative research project that's connected to this. Does the intake interview, which is a description of the problem, demographic information, the patient health questionnaire, which is a validated brief instrument that by which lay people can obtain validated psychiatric diagnoses, including depression, anxiety, suicidality, and substance use, and then the PTSD checklist, which makes a validated diagnosis of PTSD. This is what website looks like in this area. Again, more information about the client. This gives the personnel in the network associated with the client, demographic information. This is the patient health questionnaire, and this is one section that deals with somatoform symptoms. These are questions about suicidal ideation. So we have information on intake about the suicidality of the clients, which is one of the main issues we deal with, and then the PTSD checklist, which gives the diagnosis of PTSD. After the completion of the intake worker refers the information to the clinician on call, and these, again, are voluntary clinicians like Hans, who usually a week at a time on call. The clinician contacts the client whenever possible. GIs visit the network professionals in person. If an in-person visit proves unfeasible due to geographic distance, for instance, our clients in Afghanistan who contact us by cell phone, obviously it's done by phone, as well as by bases that are geographically isolated. So the clinician then provides services short-term to address the mental health crisis. Clinician refers to physical health professional, which is usually me if a physical problem is involved. Clinician prepares documentation needed for reassignment, discharge processing, etc., using templates for letters that we've developed. And then the clinician shares documentation with the clients, the GI Rights Hotline Counselor, military professionals, and the command as appropriate. And there isn't time to go into this in depth, although I'll be glad to explain this more for people who want to pursue it later. The network professionals generally provide care free or at greatly reduced costs. All of our core staff members volunteer our services except a part-time paid coordinator who's a veteran. Now, in the research component, this is mainly to document and to evaluate what we're doing, to see if it's okay. And I'm going to just very briefly present some descriptive data as of the last year. We're updating this now, and more will be presented at the medical care section meeting tomorrow. In brief, about 40% of the clients identify themselves as belonging to a minority group. Depression is the most common diagnosis, over a third. 17% of the clients overall express suicidal ideation and 17% PTSD, often overlapping. There's no consistent relationship between race, ethnicity, and mental disorders. Did a multivariate analysis that showed that lower rank military physical health conditions that overlap with mental health conditions and also history of self-harm are significantly associated with suicidality. Now, I'm just going to take a few minutes to make some comments about the American Journal of Public Health supplement on suicidality among veterans and active duty GIs. This is a letter by Jeff Engelhardt, who's the veteran coordinator, and myself. It appeared in September partly as a protest to the supplement that came out in March. It's a very interesting piece of work funded, edited, and written almost exclusively by people working for the VA and the Department of Defense. It gives a very rosy picture of what's being done. It really doesn't correspond to any of the realities that we face every day in our network. Why this is needed in terms of the work we're doing, there are actually now 18 suicides daily among veterans, tremendous public health epidemic, and actually one suicide every day among active duty GIs. More GIs deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq will die from suicide than from combat. The context: we're not optimistic about improved military policies regarding mental illness and suicidality, and it has to do with the double agency problem. That is, despite the Hippocratic requirement to address the client's needs first and foremost, military professionals also must consider how to maintain combat forces, and the resulting double agency that's involved leads to breaches in confidentiality on a regular basis because the doctors and psychologists actually are required to submit information from their clinical interviews to the command. Belittlement of distress and distrust. Harassment continues to occur when GIs seek help for mental health problems, including suicidality. Our recent clients report stigmatization, especially if they're ethnic minorities, marginalization, and other adverse reactions from commanding officers. Suicide watch, which is the way the military deals with suicidality now, basically is like a form of solitary confinement in that the GI is isolated and humiliated. This actually often worsens their suicidality. One of the major issues that we have to face is the impact of privatization and outsourcing. This can exacerbate problems because it creates barriers. The outsourcing is done to private, for-profit managed care organizations, contracting with TRICARE, which is the healthcare program for active duty personnel and their families. And so there are barriers that are initiated by these managed care organizations that are just like those that the rest of us face in dealing with managed care. And such contracts have actually become so lucrative that the executive, it's been shown, who actually benefited the most financially from the Iraq War was not a member of the military-industrial complex, but rather the CEO of a managed care organization, which actually contracted for many of the mental health services provided with military funding through our tax dollars. Civilian sector alternatives, civilian programs can counteract the double agency problem, harassment and distrust. Our network, another national organization, the Soldiers Project, and several regional initiatives have offered services, usually on a voluntary basis. Veterans organizations also that have opposed the wars also have initiated coffee shops and other outreach programs, especially near military bases. Most of our suicidal patients, the problem is that they lack a narrative. Thank you. to justify the traumas that they have suffered and inflicted, although some do cite the advantages to corporations that extract oil or rebuild infrastructure. So the HAPH supplement, I think, falsely conveys an ideology that fosters resiliency among those suffering from war, rather than analyzing war itself as the fundamental public health problem. And this is consistent with the APHA official policy statement that focuses on prevention of wars as the important way to prevent the epidemic of suicide. There are challenges involved here. I encourage those of you who are interested to get involved if you have the time and inclination. So in conclusion, active duty GIs are increasingly seeking care in the civilian sector, as opposed to the Vietnam War, when the military draft led to the induction of young people from a somewhat broader range of backgrounds. The current economic draft is such that the people who are recruited are generally of lower income and minority status, and so much of these problems are below the radar in terms of national politics. There's been essentially no discussion of these problems in any of the presidential debates, for instance. Military and veterans' medical care periodically enters public consciousness, mainly in the form of scandals. The skewed distribution of persons suffering from the war limits the attention that this issue receives from policymakers and other leaders. There's a tremendous need for services. To conclude, ethical conflicts, which derive from the contradiction of violence without clear purpose, exacerbate whatever damages might otherwise warrant medical attention. The unmet needs of active duty GIs deserves more concerted attention by the medical profession and by our society's leaders, as do more effective strategies for peace.